made a little cash. The doctors and the lawyers don't think it's funny that they're living next door to white trash with money. Well, I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. Quit school early and never went back. The rich kids all looked down on me. They said as good as them was something that I'd never be. Started playing my guitar to earn a few bucks. Banging my songs to a room full of drunks. A record man heard me down at Kitty's bar. Come on to Nashville and I'll make you a star. Well, I might have been born just poor white trash, but I sold a million records, made a little cash. The doctors and the lawyers don't think it's funny that they're living next door to white trash with money. Bought a big house on top of the hill, a brand new Harley and a coupe de ville. The neighbors all cried when I moved in. Seems real estate's cheaper than it's ever been. Now the radio plays all the railroad songs. I lay around the pool and listen all day long. This country boy's life sure turned out swell. If the neighbors don't like it, they can all go to well. I've been born just poor white trash, but I sold a million records, made a little cash. The doctors and the lawyers don't think it's funny that they're living next door to white trash and money.
Flamingos out in the front yard. No. Well, I guess my lawn jockey's out of the question.
Insurgent radio calling. Insurgent radio calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, in the heartland, in the bunker, ready to go. We got old Tommy Gunn Frank Bawa coming on here with another little old lecture. Yeah. And it's September the 11th, 2008. That'll be Thursday. Yeah, this will probably be the B show. Here we go.
Oh. Go.
Guerrilla Radio calling. Guerrilla Radio calling. This is Frank Bauer, a wannabe Tom Metzger. Maybe someday I can develop a Terrible Tommy type of reputation that the original acquired over years and years of activism. I had an interesting day today, comrades. I worked rolling hills, beautiful trees. I mean, these homes had to be $750,000, maybe close to $1 million. All of them occupied by Hindus and Pakis. And you wonder why I curse so goddamn much on this show. I don't come on this show to offend the sensibilities of our radio club, but goddamn, we've lost this country. And I don't see shit being done about it. Now, I'm not one of these guys that's going to say, we got to do something. When I say these things, I'm looking in the mirror when I say them. Now, I got a number of things to read tonight. I want to add some things. I want to add some things from a guy by the name of Alberto Bayo, General Alberto Bayo. He was a he was the guy who trained Castro in the art of guerrilla warfare. He was a Spaniard, a white Spaniard, and He took part in the Spanish Civil War against Franco in 36. He was exiled from Spain, and then he went to Cuba, and then later settled in Mexico. So when Castro was in Mexico training his guys, Castro was a student of Alberto Bayo, and it comes from 100 questions you want to ask a gorilla. 150 questions for a gorilla, I'm sorry. Number one, what is the first and most important condition that has to be met for a guerrilla war to succeed? Answer, it is necessary to be on the side of the oppressed masses in their struggle against foreign invasion, the imposition of a vile dictatorship, etc. If this prerequisite is not met, the guerrilla war will always be defeated. Whosoever starts an uprising against the will of the masses or against a popular regime will fail. I got something to say about that, but I think I'm going to wait a few shows. I think I want to get a few ideas out there first. Question number two. Who should form a guerrilla band? Answer. Only those idealistic youths who have proved their spirit of sacrifice, personal bravery, and unlimited patriotism. I think I want to correct that a little bit. I don't want to put a barrier to any age group or any gender or any ethnicity. If you're a Swede from the most northern part of Sweden, and if you're an Italian from the most southern part of the boot, and you're white, look white, act white, talk white, and think white, you're just fine by my standards. Number three, apart from these moral considerations, what other prerequisite is required for one who wishes to join a guerrilla band? Answer, he must fill out a detailed questionnaire answering such questions as his first and last names, place and date of birth, marital status, name of parents, wife and children, places of employment during the past 18 years, friends of the movement that can vouch for him, whether he had ever been imprisoned, etc., a summary of his political activity and affiliations will also be included. The questionnaire will be evaluated, and if found satisfactory, the applicant will be admitted into the guerrilla band. I don't concur with that. I think, like I said on the last show, I think it will work in this country if we keep our guerrilla band small, autonomous, no centralized leadership. You have a guy, you have a group, you have four friends who believe what you believe, who are sick and tired of going through affluent neighborhoods and seeing Pakis and Hindus everywhere, and you decide something needs to be done, you don't have to answer nobody. You do. You and your friends and you and your comrades do what you think you need to do. And whatever it is, no one should judge you. So, search your own soul and see what needs to be done. Number four, if the results of this questionnaire show that the applicant is an informer or someone who intends to join our ranks in order to betray us, what should we do with them? Answer. He will be judged by a summary court-martial as a traitor to the revolution. That's really a waste of time. If you keep your band small, keep your group small, and only people you have who have earned your trust over years of you knowing them, then I think you won't need to go through all this. Don't be looking to recruit. Like I've said before, and I've only regurgitated the words of Tom Metzger, where he said, if you were able to recruit all the white masses, what would you do with them? There would be bickering and fighting and just tearing your whole operation apart. So keep your group small. Dress in a way that doesn't attract attention. Don't be shouting white power on a street corner. Your job is to swim in the sea of the people. Your job is to be as bland as necessary. Your job is to be as bland as possible and doing the right reading and training in order for you to be effective. And don't worry about what's going on in the other part of the country. You carry out what needs to be done nowhere near where you live or where you work. You need to do your activities in an area that nobody can tie you to. For example, my family, every one of my family members know that I have absolutely no contact or business being in Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, if I was to tell them today, I went to Des Moines, Iowa over the weekend, they would say, what the hell did you do that for? Who do you know there? Always carry out your operations in a place where nobody can tie you to it. Now, I read some things, I downloaded some things the other day off the Internet, just some sayings, food for thought. I don't recall the author's name. I wish I can claim this stuff, but it's good stuff, but I don't know the author's name. Number one, tolerance for potential enemies is a crime against one's people. That's another way of saying tolerance is suicide. Very valid. Two, just as religions develop and form out of requirements of a society, most often in cooperation with the leaders of that society, priestcraft goes hand in hand with statecraft. Priestcraft keeps us stupefied, pacified, counting on the next life to get our recompense, to get our reward for suffering, for putting up with bullshit, for not seeking your personal will to power, serving the God within yourself, and being an Aryan warrior. Three, for some reason, our government views as a threat those people who display a spirit of independence by planning and preparing. Independence and self-reliance are traits that big government seeks to crush. If you are not dependent on them for anything, they are out of a job. See how it works? Very well said. Adding to that, I would like to encourage people to take it upon yourself to seek as much training in hunting, in skinning an animal for its hide, so you can use it as clothing, so you can use it as a shelter. I guess Neanderthal, I guess they used to use every part of an elk. The tendons they used to use for tying things, the intestines they used to use for carrying water, and so forth. So, and you also need to train yourself in all forms of martial arts, meaning you should know how to defend yourself empty hands, with no weapons, with improvised weapons, with a knife, with a bludgeon, whether that be a stick, an ass baton, a club. You need to learn how to defend yourself with a long weapon, such as a bow, such as a rake, you know. And you also need to learn how to defend yourself, you know, stand-up fighting in the clinch, ground fighting. I've said this before, I'll probably say it again. The reason why I sound like I'm shouting, I listened to the last show I did, and it sounded like I had either food in my mouth or like I was chewing gum while I was talking to you. The reason being was I'm holding the phone between my left elbow, my left ear, and in my right hand I have the book I'm reading out of, and in my left hand I have a magnifying glass. And the reason being, the most covert place I can do these monologues doesn't have very good lighting. So now I'm sitting in front of a ledge with the phone resting on the ledge, kind of shouting into it. So that's why it may seem or sound a little different. I may fade in and out, but I hope this comes out all right. All right, picking up in War to Flee, Chapter 5, Colonial War and the French Experience, Strategy and Tactics of, I don't know how to say this guy's name. First word is V-O, second word N-G-U-Y-E-N. I think that spells Nguyen. I think that's how the Vietnamese pronounce it. And third word is G-I-A-P. I guess that's Giap. How the Viet Minh won in Indochina. How do the laws of Revolutionary War laid down by Mao Zedong apply to the remaining colonies of the great powers? The answer is implicit in the historical record. During the two decades since the Second World War, no colonial war has been lost by colonial people once entered into. Malaya and the Philippines are the only apparent exceptions, not real ones, and they will be discussed in a later chapter. In a more fortunate instance, the colonial powers have ceded their authority in good time, bowing before the wind of history. Elsewhere, revolutionary action is rested, that's W-R-E-S-T-E-D, rested, I guess that means to seize, to take a hold of. Action has wrested the erstwhile colonies away from the extortion of terror and civil disorder, as in Cyprus and Morocco, or by clear force of arms, as in Algeria and Indochina. The struggle against the French colonial power in Indochina is of special interest. In it, we find the most clear-cut examples both of the sort of revolutionary war that must be fought to a military decision, as opposed to the insurgency that ends in political decision, and of a war fought consciously and even conscientiously according to Mao's precepts. As Katzenbach remarks, the war the Viet Minh, followers of Ho Chi Minh, fought in northern Indochina followed Mao's teachings phrase by phrase, despite the claims of Viet Minh leaders that they improved on the doctrines. The struggle lasted from 1946, when Ho Chi Minh took up arms against the French invasion. Actually, he had taken virtual possession of Vietnam the year before. With the surrender of the Japanese to the British, Chinese, and Native forces until 1954, when the country was partitioned at the 17th parallel under the terms of international agreement reached at Geneva following the fall of the French stronghold at Dien Bien Phu. I guess that's where the French lost control, and they pretty much just lost it there. That was the massacre of the French soldiers at Dien Bien Phu was I guess the last French military offensive over there. Interesting. By 62, Kennedy was sending advisors over there. So, I really don't have anything to add to that. That's, I don't know, that's kind of dry. Maybe I shouldn't have outlined it. My apologies. Let me read one more page of this and see if I can get some good stuff out of here. All right, turning the page onto, it says, I'll just pick it up in mid-sentence. It nevertheless spelled absolute defeat for the French and marked the end of the French rule in Vietnam. Although the bulk of the 500,000-man French Expeditionary Corps remained intact, 172,000 casualties in 8 years of fighting. Its spirit was broken, and the political compromise that followed failed to disguise the fact that French arms had met ignominious defeat in the field at the hands of what had been considered a ragtag native army that could be smashed in 10 weeks. You know, I think our thing is going to be a lot tougher, seeing the technology that's going to be employed against us compared to what was employed against the Viet Minh. I mean, they got far more advanced infrared that they can scan forests and jungles with. But, I mean, a jungle like Vietnam, it had triple canopy. Maybe infrared wouldn't do so good. But, you know, I mean, the type of bombs they got, cluster bombs, smart bombs, so... You know, I read somewhere that it doesn't matter how much technology improves. It always takes a human being who's fault-ridden, who has faults, no matter how well he's trained, to screw up the technology, to misread it, and so forth. picking it up again. It says, during the 8 years of battle, the Viet Minh passed from a movement of scattered guerrilla bands operating in a country or even platoon strength to a regular army of mobile divisions armed with light artillery and equal in organization and fighting ability to the best that the French could put in the field. But while the final phase of strategic offensive described by Mao was fought by such an army, by far the great part of the long campaign was guerrilla warfare. Meaning that the guerrillas didn't become a regular army until the very last phase of the struggle. That for the most part of their struggle against the French, the way I read it here, far more time was spent towards guerrilla action. So, you know, I mean, I've heard Tom Metzger say before, and maybe other people, that we're not going to win this struggle in our lifetime. But we leave it up to you young guys to pass on the things you learn off these radio shows, the things you learn off the things you read. I hope you're reading things on counterinsurgency as well as anything dealing with guerrilla warfare. And like I said before, we're not going to copy anybody, but we can use ideas. All right. I'm going to switch over to something here. I just feel compelled to check in on our friend James Mowry. During the time that I'm reading War of the Flea, I'm going to be incorporating other stuff into this, like 150 questions for a gorilla. I got some stuff on, I just finished a book about assassins and how they were used during the Crusades, how the Arabs, the sand niggers, employed assassins. So that should be interesting. Even though the author sounds very praising of the Arab assassins, you know, I'll read it, I'll look at their ideas, and I'll, you know, twist it however way I can to fit my own situation. You know, like I said before, and I hope you guys are adopting the same mindset, we play by no rules. We are not going to put ourselves in a box by playing by rules. We're not going to worry about how we're viewed by the non-white races or the white traitors. We're not going to care when they say that you're dishonorable, you're a savage, take those terms of opprobrium as a compliment. I mean, if they say bad things about you, you know, take that as a compliment that you don't run with the pack, that you set your own trends. So we don't worry about standards and morals. Morals are all relative. Moral codes are all relative. You know, we lived under a totally different moral code 500 years ago, and I'm sure that we'll live under a different moral code 500 years from now if the white race is around. So let's see how James is doing here. In the early morning, Mowry went to a different agency and rented an automobile under the name of Morfydd Paeth. Damn these names. With an address in Raedene. Raedene is a city on the planet of Jymek. Okay, so he's causing hell in a few cities, not just one. He couldn't risk the same agency twice in succession. It was very likely that already the police had visited the first one and asked pointed questions. There they'd recognize him as a subject of official investigation and detain him on some pretext while they used the telephone. He drove out of town carefully, not wanting to draw the attention of any patrol cars lurking around. Eventually, he reached a tree with an abnormal branch formation. Think about that, abnormal branch formation. You gotta pay attention to your surroundings. That'd be a tree with an abnormal branch formation is a good landmark. You could hide something there. You could use that as a reference point for an azimuth from your compass reading to go to where you got a cache. You know, come to the tree with an abnormal branch formation, head southwest from there by 400 meters. Oh, something else I want to interject here with you guys, a little technique that we had in the Army. We had this thing called a pace count. And that was, when you're on patrol, you know, you have to go from point A to point B, and the distance between the two is, let's say, 1,300 meters. We went by meters in the Army because the map system was based on grids, 1,000-meter grids. So when you say, well, we got to go 13 clicks southwest, that's 1,300 meters. A click is 1,000 meters. And we had a what we call a pace count. We would walk a well-established, verified distance of 100 meters, and every time our left foot would hit the ground, we would count. And it's too much to count every step, you know, when you're walking left, right, you know, one, two, three, but it's too much to count, too much to keep track of. So every time your left foot hits the ground, you would count. When you reach your 100 meters, for example, my pace count was 62. So my left foot would land, every time I step off my left foot, within that 100 meters, it was 62 times. And I wouldn't do it just once. I would do it one time over flat terrain, one time over moderate terrain, an established marked out 100 meters, and one time over rough terrain. And I would take the three, and I would multiply them and then divide by three. You know, get your average. Obviously, you would take more steps during rough terrain, maybe take a few less more steps over moderate terrain, and even less steps over flat terrain. You know, if you don't have those types of terrain, then all you have is flat terrain with maybe intermediate rolling hills. Then just mark it out three times, walk it out three times, and then get the average of the three times. And mine was 62. And we'd have a piece of 550 cord, parachute cord, tied off through one of our buttonholes on our front BDU shirt. And every time we'd walk 100 meters, or the one guy in a patrol designated for pace count. That was his sole job. You may have a backup for that, but you can't have every guy in the patrol worrying about pace count. So you have one guy worry about pace count, and he would tie a knot in his string in his 550 cord every time 100 meters would elapse, and he would do that for 1,300 meters. And when you got about 1,200 meters, 1,250 meters, you would start looking for your point, and when you plotted your point out on a map, you said, all right, it's between two hills. So when you're coming up on 13 meters, you're going to be looking for the terrain feature on the ground. I want to look for a saddle, which is a place between two hills, a valley. So if you have a patrol of six guys, one guy could be your pace count. One guy could be your in-route recorder, meaning when you're on the patrol, he will record all things going on. For example, there's a fighter jet, you know, many miles in the sky or whatever, traveling from northwest to southeast. Or you saw a formation of them. You know, I mean, they're so far up in the sky that they don't even see you. I mean, you know, they're on a totally different mission. So you would record stuff like that. If you heard artillery shells exploding, you know, 5,000 meters to your north or to your east, you would record that. You know, you had your compass man. Your compass man was not your front man. Your point man, his sole job is to look out for booby traps, look out for signs of ambush. Your compass man was your second man. Usually your compass man was your patrol leader. And every time you came to a security halt, your last guy would not be facing in the same direction as everyone else. He's covering your rear. And every time you guys come to a stop, and you need to practice this out in the field, when you come to a security halt, either everyone takes a knee or you get into the prone position facing out in a cigar-shaped position, but everybody's facing out covering, the entire 360, it would be an oblong 360 because it's shaped like a cigar, you would be covering your sector of fire. You know, and it's important that you develop that discipline. Okay. Picking off where, I don't mean to get on a, go on a tangent, but if something sparks my memory and I remember something that worked well in the military, I'm going to pass it on to you guys. So pace count. Get your pace count. Okay. Back to James Mowry here. He drove out of town carefully, not wanting to draw attention of any patrol cars lurking around. Eventually, he reached a tree with abnormal branch formation and the mock tombstone beneath it, whatever that is. For a few minutes, he stopped nearby, pretending to tinker with the engine until the road was clear of traffic. Then he drove the car over the grassy knoll and in between the trees. He's hiding his car because he thinks his car is being traced. Or he thinks that the police, the secret police, are looking for his car. Okay. Going a few pages further, the pot coming slowly but surely to the boil. Their fleets have been widely dispersed. Talking about, he's causing so much havoc, and you remember James Mowry's an earthling posing as a... by the way, the Jamaicans have purple skin, so he had to do something special to his skin to make him look purple. Remember, this book is written in 57, but, you know, it's a good book. He had to ditch his car because he thought the secret police were after him. And they talk about the fleets being widely dispersed. Yeah, remember the Jaimican Empire is at war against Earth, and Earth is on their way to invade the place. And James Mowry, as a wasp, went in there as like an advance party, kind of like a one man army, basically just to screw shit up, to be an engine of chaos. There were vast troop movements from their overcrowded home system to the outer planets of their empire. They're gradually being chivied into a fix, whatever chivied means, C-H-I-V-V-I-E-D. I should have looked that up. Sorry about that. But into a fix. They can't hold what they've got without spreading all over it. I guess they're spreading themselves thin, kind of like what we talk about in guerrilla warfare. When military occupations are spreading themselves thin, then you use your Erwin Rommel economy of force. Like I said before, you don't want to take 20 of your guys against 20 of theirs, or 20 of your guys against 10 of theirs, because remember, they're better trained, they got better equipment, they can get on a radio and call for artillery support. So you want to hit and run. You want to cause maximum damage in a very short amount of time against the smallest element that you feel that you can overcome. So these Jaimicans were spreading themselves thin over their ring of planets in their empire. Okay, the wider they spread, the thinner they get. The thinner they get, the easier it is to bite lumps out of them. That's guerrilla warfare. Hold it for a bit while I check your ballywick. Somebody's talking to him. He went off, he came back after a time. Yes, the position there is that they don't dare take any strength away from Jaimic, no matter how greatly needed elsewhere. In fact, they may yet have to add to it at the expense of another place. Okay, Maori's talking to his, he has a communication device where he can talk to his boss back on Earth. And they were just talking about troop movements that were taking place because of all the havoc he was causing. Okay, a couple pages later. Under the War Emergency Powers Act, by the order of the Jaimic Ministry of Defense, all organizations, societies, parties, and other corporate bodies will be registered at the Central Bureau of Records. I totally see this coming in America. Central Bureau of Records in Pertain, remember that other city, not later than the 20th of this month. Secretaries will state in full the objects and purposes of their respective organizations, societies, parties, and other corporate bodies. They're doing this because they're trying to find this this revolutionary organization, VAG. Organizations, societies, and parties, and other corporate bodies, give the address and habitual meeting place, and provide a complete list of members. Wow, that's Homeland Security. You don't think they're doing that by now? If you belong to a membership organization, believe me, the feds know about you. That's how they found out about me. Okay, under the War Emergency Powers Act, by the order of the Joint Ministry of Defense, after the 20th of this month, any organization, party, whatever corporate body will be deemed an illegal movement if not registered in accordance with the above order. Membership in any illegal movement or the giving of aid and comfort to any member of an illegal movement will constitute a treacherous offense punishable by death. So at last they've made a counter move. DAG must kneel at the confessional or at the strangling post. I guess that was how they executed somebody, to tie them to a post and strangle them. I can think of worse things. By a simple legislative trick, they got DAG where they want it, coming and going. It was a kill or cure tactic, full of psychological menace, well calculated to scare all the weaklings out of DAG's ranks. I wonder if the system really buttons down. I wonder how many people we're going to have who say they believe in the white race and all that. I'm kind of curious about that. I really feel that I'm going to tough it out because I've gotten to a point in my life, and maybe some of you can relate to this. I feel that, I don't know. I am not a, like I said, I am a glass half empty kind of guy. So I think life is kind of shitty. Life in this society is fucked up. You know, I got up this morning at 3 o'clock in the morning because I was being picked up by a coworker because I was being issued my own vehicle for this job. And so I had to leave my car at home because I had to drive this vehicle home. And, you know, I mean, I got up kind of early. I, you know, did my hygiene, did whatever, got dressed, and I'm waiting for this guy to pick me up. And I'm just, you know, going through the channels. And, you know, it's early in the morning. It's like 3:30, 3:45 in the morning. And a lot of infomercials on. Sure enough, I turn on Spike, and they have this long infomercial about girls gone wild. And I don't know how you guys feel about that. I fucking hate girls gone wild. These beautiful, I mean beautiful white women that could turn your knees to water. Beautiful. I mean goddesses. Damn, this one girl from Pennsylvania, I mean, hourglass figure, nice legs, nice thick legs, you know, meaty legs, but not fat. I mean, beautiful ass, big breasts. I mean, she was, and her face was just beautiful. Girl from Pennsylvania. And, you know, she made a statement, oh, that's how we roll in Pennsylvania, some shit like that. And these college girls, white college girls, are just whoring themselves out for a fucking 15 minutes of fame. And I don't see black, Hispanic, and Asian women doing this shit. I mean, I know there's hardcore porn out there, and they got a lot of Asian women there, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but everywhere I see where there's strippers, where there's women whoring themselves out, it's always white women. And this guy behind that's in charge of this Girls Gone Wild, he looks very Semitic to me. I forgot his name. And I was trying to find out from someone if he was a Jew or not, but, you know, a pot's upon his house. You know, I hope that he runs afoul with some really dangerous person and this person abducts him and just fucking mutilates his sorry ass. That's how pissed off I am by this Girls Gone Wild shit. Believe me, I'm not a prude. You know, I may not drink. I don't drink alcohol because it's a choice, because I don't like the way I feel the next morning, because I don't like what it does to the body. Alcohol, too much alcohol, over drinking flushes way too much protein out of the body, and that is a fact. But I'm definitely by no means a prude. I am not a Christian. I am a-religious. I don't like this pornography stuff because I don't like what it's doing to white women. It's messing them up mentally. I'm not saying it's making them mentally retarded, but it's sending them it's making them do bad things by habit. You know, it's inculcating into their brain that, hey, I'll get what I want out of this life with my body and my breasts and my beautiful face and not my brain. And I'm really pissed off by this, and I hope you guys out there aren't buying this shit. I hope you're raising hell about it. How many of you guys out there are doing your propaganda? Racially mixed neighborhoods, you need to be putting propaganda out there that pisses black people off. What are you saying, Frank? Do you want blacks to start assaulting white people? Fuck yeah, I want that shit. If white people are going to sit on their ass and not do nothing for our race, if they're gonna just go merrily about their way and be friends with black guys and they come into the bar so they don't look like a racist, I see this shit all the time and it's pissing me off. Yes, I do want white people to get their ass handed to them. I want them to wake up, and if they refuse to do so, then I want them to be waylaid by the wayside. I don't even want them to be alive. You know, I said to this black militant on a blogger the other day. I responded to a joke that he said about something about whites only or whatever, and how that got turned back on. So I don't even want to repeat the joke, but. You know, I went off about it. I said to black, you know, that you blacks wouldn't be shit without the white man. You wouldn't be driving cars. You wouldn't be speaking English. You wouldn't be wearing clothes. You wouldn't even know what mathematics was. I mean, it's just, and this guy got really pissed off. And I emailed him back after he told me to suck a dick and die. And I said, I'm not one of these white power kind of guys. I said, I am a white nihilist. I want to see the complete destruction of every institution in this country because, and you may disagree with me, but I think they are thoroughly infiltrated. These institutions are our enemies. They've been totally turned against us. And I told this nigger, I'm like, I want to see the downfall of the United States government. I want it to get so bad in this country that cops don't even have a job anymore. That they just want they take their guns and their training home to their own family to protect their own family. I told them I want to see the end of, and I told them I am willing to sacrifice millions of sissy ass white motherfuckers in this country to get what I want accomplished, to get what I to move them out of the way. And the remaining hardcore whites, for them to get harder and more brutal and heartless and ruthless and black-hearted. That's what I want. I want a small army of white Genghis Khans running amok all over this place without any centralized leadership, with their small group of guys. And when we really start getting to a point in this country where the system is history. Think of this analogy. I got a paintbrush in my hand and it's sopping wet with paint, and I just fling my brush at the wall and it causes all these drips and dots, and these drips start dripping down the wall and they start connecting with other drips and drops and whatnot. That's what I want. But the only way we're going to get that, the only way we're going to start forming a cohesive pagan military, even Christian identity. I'm not going to pull the plug on Christian identity. If you want to be Christian identity, but be hardcore and merciless and ruthless, I have no problem with you. You know, and when we win this thing. We'll sit down, we'll have a big conference and figure out what we're going to do about paganism and Christianity and wokenism and whatever. So, but let's get there first. I know I'm not going to see that day. I know my role in this lifetime, and I think I've discovered my role about 18 months ago. My role is a destroyer. If I can't physically destroy, then I will spread the message, the gospel of destruction. Because during destruction, the seeds of construction of the new white world are planted. You know, a good book to read on that is The Lightning and the Sun by Savitri Devi. Okay. This performance pleased him immensely. A month ago, the recipients would have dismissed it as the work of an imbecile. I don't remember what that was. I didn't highlight it, but maybe if I read on, it'll tell me. But today, the circumstances were vastly different. The powers that be have revealed themselves as annoyed, if not frightened. With moderate luck, the sardonic registration form would have boosted their anger. Oh, I know what he did. Remember how they're getting all these groups to... Oh, it says it right here. James Mowry went in and got a form to register his organization. And it says, title of organization, Dirac Agestung Gesep, which is the DAG. Purpose of organization, destruction of present government and termination of war against Terra. Terra is Earth, by the way. Customary meeting place, wherever the secret police can't find us. Names and addresses of elected officers. You'll find out when it's too late. You know, he's filling in these boxes with these statements. Attach hitherto complete list of members. And it says signature Jaime Chalaperta, whatever. I don't know. I guess he made up a name. But he covertly turned in the form and got out of the place before the form was discovered. And I guess it really caused an uproar. Because, you know, they're thinking, hey, the guy, one of the members of DAG was here. And don't forget, I mean, you can't take all these things I'm giving you. Because, when I'm reading this book, I noticed something that was missing. You know what that was? Closed circuit television. It's everywhere now. That's why you have to, when you're on a mission, you have to dress in a way that is totally foreign to what people think you dress. Okay. With moderate luck, the sardonic registration would boost their anger, and that would be all to the good. A mind filled with fury cannot think in cool, logical manner. Maybe that's directed to me. I'm kind of an emotional, angry, pissed off guy. So, wow, I got a lot of pages here that I didn't find anything useful. Here we go. All right, at the training college, this is where Mowry learned to be a wasp, they had lectured him again and again to the same effect. Let me jump up one paragraph. Moodiness afflicted him as he walked. He became obsessed with the notion that he had been chased out of the city, if not only temporarily, and he didn't like it. Every step he took seemed like another triumph for the foe, another defeat for himself. Now here we go. At the training college, they had lectured him again and again to the same effect. Maybe you like having a mulish character. That's how I am. I'm like this guy. I'm easily not depressed and pissed off. Well, I don't know, maybe. But maybe that'll make me more radical in the end. I don't know. Maybe you like having a mulish character. Well, in some circumstances, it's called courage. In others, it's downright stupidity. You've got to resist the temptation to indulge in unprofitable heroics. Well, I have a lot of respect for Benjamin Smith, but I think I would rather have Benjamin Smith of the World Church of the Creator alive. You know, from what I understand, the guy was really active. I mean, the guy was always doing some form of activism. So that kind of speaks to me. I'm definitely not going to fly off half-cocked and do whatever. So, but I got to fight my own little war. I'm a lone wolf. I don't have no friends who think like me. I have associates. I have friends who know how I think, and they know I'm pretty radical. But I would never elicit their help in anything. In fact, if I did do something, when I got around my friends, I would be condemning the action that I did if me and my friends were watching on the news. I'm like, oh, look at this shit. That's all we need, man. More racial bullshit in this country, you know.
because all warfare is based on deception. Never abandon caution merely because you think it looks like cowardice. It requires guts to sacrifice one's ego for the sake of the job. A dead hero is no use to us. Man, that's convicting. That's a punch to the chest right there. You know, Frank Bauer, calm the fuck down. Frank Bauer, other known as Gas Herkin. Okay, well, I'm looking at the time here. I'm not sure how much time I got left. I think I got a few more minutes. All right, Maori kept going as fast as he could make it. The gun in his grip, his ears straining for sounds of pursuit. Pretty soon, the radio alarm would be going over the air. They'd close every exit from the town, blocking trains, buses, roads, everything. At all costs, he must beat them to it. As far as possible, he kept to lanes and alleys, avoiding main roads on which patrol cars would be running to and fro. At this late hour, there were no crowds in which to hide. The streets were almost empty, with most folks in bed. And an armed man sprinting through the night was mightily conspicuous. Conspicuous. But nothing could be done about that. To amble along with an air of innocence was to give time for the trap to close the bottom. You know what? You got to look at the situation. If you got to haul ass, haul ass. If you got to act with casual confidence and calmly walk out of an area, you'll only know that, I think, by practice. I don't know. You got to know yourself. Socrates said, "Know yourself." And few men in this struggle know themselves. So know yourself, know your limitations, and know your enemy. Darkness was his only help. Not counting his legs, I guess that's how many meters he had to run, he pounded through alley after alley, bolted across six streets, halted in a deep shadow as he was about to cross the seventh. A car bulging with cops and plainclothes police slid past, its windows full of faces trying to look everywhere at once. For a short time, Maori stood silent and unmoving in the shadow, heart thumping, chest heaving, a trickle of sweat creeping down his spine. As soon as the hunters had gone, he had crossed the street into the opposite alley, racing onward. Five times he paused in concealment. What's concealment? Shadows. In an urban area, it's shadows, or anything you can hide behind. Or a clump of trees, a bush. I think I'm going to stop there. I'm not sure how much time I got left. But I hope I was audible enough for you guys today. I think I'm going to have to do this from now on because it just sounds, my speech sounds too sluggish. So I hope you guys are enjoying this. I hope I'm not boring because this isn't about me. I want to see the most ruthless white people to ever walk this earth. If they're not born yet, I hope I play some small part in bringing about the catalyst that'll bring this to fruition. I mean, I'm, you know, seeing white people getting their ass handed to them. And I know on one side of my mouth, I'm like, you know, you guys spread propaganda that'll piss off black people. Spread propaganda, piss off white people. Maybe that's what you should do. In a racially mixed area, put out a flyer that's anti-white, that's purportedly from blacks, bragging about the rape and murder of some white girl. Do that shit. I mean, come on, guys. This shit should be making the news. And if it's not, maybe if you're covering enough, then look on the bright side. You're affecting the news, even if they censor it. So, 14 words. Worse is better for now. And let me read one more time something I read earlier. Tolerance for potential enemies of our race is a crime against one's people. Words to live by. 14.
Well, there you go. Another fine performance by Mr. Bauer, lovingly known as Frankie. And he'll be back again. We'll do a show together, I believe, on Saturday morning. So sometime Saturday you should get another show with Tommy and Frankie. We'll close out the show with a little music here. 14 words. And Thomas Martinez, sleep lightly wherever you're at.
I've reached the point now where I'm not proud of too many lovers that I never loved. And I never questioned those empty days till I met the woman that made me want to say, I think about all the time I wasted, could have spent with you. All the lies I've fallen for while searching for the truth, there are turns I should have taken, but now I'm right fine. Just like that waste of time. I've got a boy now, he's about half grown. His mama raised him, dad was always gone. I was just so busy trying to make him proud. Next time I see him, I'm gonna tell him now. I think about all the time I wasted, I could have spent with you. All the lies I've fallen for while searching for the truth, there are turns I should have taken, but now I'll never find. Just like that waste of time. Tonight I'll wait for a quiet time. Close my eyes and open up my mind. Bow my head down, say a little prayer. Hope it's not too late for me to tell the man upstairs. I think about all the time I wasted, I could have spent with you. And all the lies I've fallen for were searching for the truth. There are turns I should have taken, but now I'll never find. Just like that waste of time. Just like that waste of time. Yeah.
hit when referring to the cervical region of my spine. That verbal combination just gets me every time.
Call me a clodhopper, call me a stump jumper, call me a pain in the tail. Call me an antiquated backwater cracker, call me Ishmael. Call me a knuckle-dragging inbred honky, call me a flat-jawed hit. Call me an out-of-brain, shallow-minded boondocker, I don't mind a bit. But all I gotta say, that's all she wrote. Come on, gang, let's take her on home.